Now, time to talk music. Who else but Glenn A. Baker is with us tonight on Boxing Day. Glenn, thank you so much for coming in.
Rodney, a delight to be here. And what you hinted at earlier is exactly what happened. I was at a concert. I was at the Enmore. Not only was I out the front watching a band, but I got to go back and actually have a bit of a natter to them. And the band was Blondie. And in fact, I got a kiss and cuddle from Debbie Harry, which pretty much topped up my year, I have to say. But one of the things I was discussing first with Chris was how the band had broken in Australia, mm-hmm. and not just broken moderately, but they went to number one in Australia with a song. Well, they went to number one in Australia 2 full years, wow. before they would go to number one in America with Heart of Glass. And it's a scenario we've come to see over many years, and that is either, in this case, a television station, but either a radio or TV station, somebody just playing a track off their own bat and just building up enough energy, mm-hmm. for it to work. Now, it was Molly on Countdown, and Molly had got hold of the first album of Blondie from the Lower East Side, yeah. sort of who in New York, who didn't quite know that they were a punk band. They were more a pop band, yes. to be perfectly honest. And he liked a track on it called In the Flesh. So he just started, and he got hold of a clip, which is the secret of it all, started playing it on Countdown. The thing straight out of the box, straight to number one, had an awful lot to do with the fact that there was this shimmering, translucent, gorgeous apparition out the front of the band. And that she worked so well on television. But In the Flesh, they did not then go on to become a hit anywhere else in the world. Certainly Heart of Glass was the first American one. I think Denis was the first British one. And to this day, I think the only place in the world they bother to play it is when they come to Australia. But then, as we'll find as we go on, a number of acts have to dust off things when they arrive in Australia that only we Australians know. So just to get us in the mood for it, why don't we hear a little bit of In the Flesh?
Joy in the Flesh while you hear Blondie do it in Australia. If you see them elsewhere, they probably won't.
Yes, right. You see them anywhere else in the Northern Hemisphere, it probably slips out of their set. Now, but then again, bands have to, in fact, like I said, add things to their set. Often, true. When they've arrived in Australia and disc jockeys are saying, and we're going to hear your new number one, and they're looking at each other going, what's our new number one? But getting back to the beginning of it all,
yes.
I mentioned they were broken by Blondie. This goes back to Bandstand, mm-hmm. Brian Henderson's Bandstand, the end of 1959, he gets handed a piece of film, I suppose it was 16 mil film footage, of this character by the name of Crash Craddock. Now, Crash Craddock suddenly was rushed to air, and Brian put him in every show he could and built up a huge following, and we just took it for granted that he must have been a major international rocker, like Gene Vincent, Eddie Cochran, and Elvis, and Jerry Lee, and Carl Perkins, and all the others.
Because we had no way of knowing.
We had no internet.
And like we were just told, well, he's the biggest star.
In fact, he did not become known in America until his run of country hits like Rub It in the mid-70s, when I think he finally was able to say, see, I told you I was a star. I didn't make up all that Australian stuff. But he had a couple, about three big hits down here, but the one we all remember because of that Countdown sort of, you know, Bandstand exposure, yeah. was the number one, Boom Boom Baby.
I got a gal and she's so fine. Let me hug and kiss her all the time. Like you see her through the chicken pot. Shakes all over from the bottom to the top. Of boom, boom, boom. I see her boom. Boom. Well, boom, boom, baby, please don't stop. Boom, boom, baby, I've made it clear. Till I die, I'll always want you near. Every evening when the lights are low, I watch my boom, boom, baby, you go boom, boom.
Boom, boom, Boom Boom Baby by Crash Craddock.
Who, like I said, the global rock star who wasn't.
However, well, there was other hits by global rock stars that were hits because someone plucked them off an album.
Well, there was this character that existed. He's now gone the way of the dodo. He's now gone the way... He was the self-programming disc jockey. Wow. And it's hard to imagine they ever existed because nowadays, of course, they have program managers and music directors, and they all slavishly open their billboards, they only program something that is track proven. But believe it or not, once upon a time, a Ward Austin or a Stan Roaf in Melbourne or Tony MacArthur in Brisbane would just find a single he liked and just start playing the hell out of it and turn it into a massive hit. Now, that was the case with the Rolling Stones. Now, the Rolling Stones that arrived in Australia in 65 and 60 and 66, they hadn't had that many hits. But one hit they knew they hadn't had,
yes,
absolutely, because it was only ever an EP track in England. And I suspect it was only on an EP because they needed another track to fill up a release, and they probably rushed in and did it, was Under the Boardwalk. The year before, it had been a hit for the Drifters and a hit in the Northern Hemisphere for the Drifters, but down in Australia we had a bit of trouble playing records by Black Axe. Very unfortunate. We didn't hear a lot of Black, which is why Normie Rowe and Ray Brown and all the other characters were able to cover them when they came out.
Well, you talk about hits that were hits here but nowhere else. You look at the songs that were never hits in Australia that were hits all over the world. So many of them are by great Motown artists. Atlantic
Marvin Gaye did not have a hit in Australia until Sexual Healing in 83.
Unbelievable.
45 hits just went by. But getting back to the point, the Rolling Stones arrive in Australia, and it is the scenario of Mick, lads, Keith, you're going to be playing your number one, and they're going, what number one is that? Under the Boardwalk. And I think they're looking at each other going, what? You cannot be...
So someone's plucked it off one of their albums.
Yeah, or an album, or the EP.
Or the EP.
And then played it. The record company has picked up on it, put it out as a single, goes to number one. So all the things I'm playing tonight either went to one, two, or three, basically.
Yeah.
I'm not playing any lesser things like 11 or 12. So, but because we never heard the Drifters version, to millions of Australians, the Rolling Stones had the hit with Under the Boardwalk. And this is how they remember it sounding.
Very nice, the Rolling Stones and Under the Boardwalk. By the way, on the text message, 0467 922 702, Mia asks the question. The answer is no, Mia. It's not true. There's no link between Ted Bundy and Deborah Harry.
No,
he never picked her up in his car. It's total hoax.
Total hoax. Although we did have a chat, Deborah and I, about her days in The Wind in the Willows, her
psychedelic
mamas and papas type group.
Yeah.
And she said, the guy who got us, put the group together, was one of the guys who went and created the Woodstock Festival. And then she said, and he never even booked us for it. That was great. Okay, now the Beach Boys. So what you've got to remember too, with acts like the Stones and the Beach Boys and the Beatles, there's so much product.
Yes.
They're so hugely successful that when you're out of the eye, sort of out of the eye of the storm, you can get away with things. So you can actually start playing tracks that haven't been sanctioned, but who's going to know and who's going to care? Now, the Beach Boys were clever. They had an affinity with Australia, and so they, I think, quite encouraged it. And what I noticed is on their 50th anniversary tour, which was during this year, which was gloriously good, they actually dropped this song in fairly early in the show, and I could see Brian giving one of those smiles to say, yeah, it's for you guys, it's for you guys. So this was, again, another massive hit in only Australia, and it was a thing called Hawaii. Do you wanna go?
I heard.
eyes. Got everyone that goes comes back with nothing to lose.
The question is...
Wonderful song, by the way.
No, it's a great song.
And by the way, here's a weird thing.
Yeah.
There's a few Gene Pitney hits, we'll get to Gene in a minute, that were Australian only.
Yeah.
And there's one called Hawaii, which is another song.
Yeah.
So we must have liked the subject of Hawaii.
But why didn't that become a hit in Hawaii?
Well, you know, given that there are no Hawaiian charts, I'm not in a position to know. But I can tell you, it wasn't a hit in America, so it didn't cross over, therefore, to become a general American hit. Now, here's another example of a track that was on an EP, an extended play for younger listeners. And it sort of just came out in sort of like the Russian crush, the hurly-burly in Britain. We picked it up and started playing it as a single, and it became the only number one hit for this act. It became the biggest hit they ever had in Australia. And again, well, I'm talking about the Shadows here, and I've spoken about this to Hank Marvin and, you know, and Bruce Welch.
Yeah.
And I say, you know, I mean... They have to do it in Australia, but I say, does anyone ever ask for it in England? They said, it's not really an issue. They didn't hear it on the radio. It's not their thing. He said, they did get a bit of action on an EP. He said, but no, largely not like you guys.
Well,
so,
you know, but Shadow songs, one's very much like
you're saying, how can you tell? You can tell the difference. Oh, this is me holding up my fingers in a crucifix.
What's the name of the song?
This is called The Boys, and it was a theme from a film called The Boys.
Only number one hit the Shadows ever had.
Now, I say this saying that I grew up in Sydney. I'm referring to a Sydney chart book here. People in Melbourne, Brisbane, etc. might have a different view. But however, I mean, yeah, they went to 3, 2, 2, 6, 7, 4, 7, 5, 4. But once did they get to number one, and that was with The Boys. Now, the same thing happens to Hank. Cut forward a bunch of years, and to the end of the decade, 8 years, and it's 1970. Hank does a solo album. He does a sumptuous and gorgeous instrumental called Sasha.
Great, great. One of the greatest instrumentals.
Yeah, goes to number one in Australia. Yeah. Nowhere else. Doesn't chart anywhere else in the world. So this is two times that Hank B, and he's the bespectacled lad, has been number one in Australia, and he can't boast a word about it back in England because nobody's going to believe him.
Bit of a
beautiful
build.
Yeah. And now, of course, he lives
in Perth,
has been living there for more than 20 years. Surprise. Who knows? He may even be listening to us.
Hank B. Marvin, if you are listening, call right now 1-300-800-222.
Your call will take.
Yes, the only. Anyone who's got a story about one of these hits or knows the reason why, we love to hear from you. 1-300-800-222.
They're going to be short comments because, boy, have we got some
a lot
news
to get through. Now, I've got to ask though. Stephen Ballarat says, I think I remember that the Motels hit Total Control was a hit here before
it had been
else.
A number one in Canada.
Okay.
And I was going to play the Beaumarchs, clap your hands, but that had been a number one in Canada. I'm trying to be pure here. I'm trying to get things that are only really ever did chart in Australia. Right. However, okay. Cliff yes. comes to mind when we talk about the Shadows. Right. How does he not? And, of course, all over the Commonwealth with Summer Holiday.
Yeah.
In Australia, it was a double A side,
okay.
which means the other side got played as much as Summer Holiday, was never released as such in England, so they don't know it as a radio hit. So this is all ours, and it's Put On Your Dancing Shoes.
You must have heard of a little Bo Peep. She was the gal with all the sheep. Well, one day, it's sad to say, the sheep all ran away. She was lonely and she was blue. She was sad and crying too. So I told her what to do. I said, put on your dancing shoes.
Put on your dancing shoes. Put on your dancing shoes. Put on your dancing shoes. And dance away your blues.
Yeah. A friend of mine had an accident. Laughed so hard off of war he went. Humpty Dumpty was his name. I guess you've heard the same. He was lying on the ground, bits and pieces all around. So I told him what to do. I said, put on your dancing shoes.
Put on your dancing shoes.
Cliff Richard and Put On Your Dancing
Which we knew, we were entirely familiar with it, but like I said, it was just another track from the soundtrack of a very successful film. Even the Fab Four, I should point out, were not...
averse to this?
They knew nothing about it. Because when their albums came out, because in America the albums were different, Capitol really stuffed up their albums in America, so they put out an album called Yesterday and Today, which was not a proper Beatles album, and from it, they put out Nowhere Man as a single back with What Goes On. Mm-hmm. So maybe the Australian company, EMI here, said, look, we can get away with it too, because Nowhere Man was not a single at all in England, just like Long and Winding Road would not be a single in England as well.
Yesterday wasn't a single either.
Right.
It didn't make the charts in Britain until about 1976, right. I think.
So we put out Nowhere Man as a double A side. And the other side, it was Nowhere Man / Norwegian Wood, which makes Australia the only country in the whole world where Norwegian Wood got to number one.
About the Beatles, though, is they made it their business. They wanted to have, certainly in Britain and I presume in Australia to a lesser extent, albums had album songs on them.
Yes, and singles had singles. And they were very
different.
Precise. About,
She Loves You was
and
never...
And Capitol ruined everything.
Yeah.
Capitol put a hell album... They put out 14-track albums and singles as singles. They had nobility about what they did. They cared about their fans. These rednecks in America did anything they wanted to do to their... A guy called Al Dexter Jr., Dave Dexter, remixed the things.
Yeah.
Imagine taking George Martin's sort of, precious work, and they weren't happy with Capitol in America at all.
And they would take songs from one album, stick them on another.
another album.
Fill it up with EPs and all sorts of things.
You got it, yeah, which was not a good thing. In trying to keep myself
that's all right.
At the pace, I'm trying to remember what track we are.
Well, we get on to track three on the next one. While you're thinking about that, I'll say hello to Sean in Wodonga. He's listening via the PC at the moment, but wants to know, is the webcam working? We don't have a webcam in this studio. So Sean,
otherwise, you'd see a bedraggled, bearded man juggling CDs and throwing them around the room. I found the next one that we're going to
play. Thank you very much. All right, so we've moved on from the Beatles, who are quite happy in Australia to take a song, Norwegian Wood, which was on Rubber Soul.
Oh, that's right, along with Nowhere Man.
And then stick it on a single.
Well, they didn't, but the EMI did.
So the record company did, yeah.
And it probably was because a disc jockey...
Who was playing it.
Was playing it, and they decided that they were quick. So you could get a single out in a week.
Yeah.
There was no big deal then.
But wasn't it also the case that you wanted to differentiate yourself? You didn't want to just play the Beatles singles. They had an album's worth of stuff that wasn't being played. You may as well play it.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Now, Paul Jones... Handsome young lad, lovely blues singer, was the leader of Manfred Mann.
Indeed.
Until he quit, and then Mike Darbo took over as the leader with Mighty Quinn and all those other hits. So when he left, after Pretty Flamingo, he'd had hits with, you know, sort of, but Pretty Flamingo was his last real hit. They worked hard to get him back into the charts as a solo act. So I've been a bad, bad boy. Was a high time, wonderful. Then he came to Australia with The Who and The Small Faces, and a very, very controversial tour, which had them almost sort of deported by federal police.
Never came back for 30-odd years.
Yeah, well, Townsend certainly didn't come back for about 35. Right. Paul's okay. Paul's
an Oxford gentleman.
But anyway, so because he was here, I suspect, and they wanted new product, they whipped another track out here, and it became a smash hit in Australia only. Written by a man called Mike Leander, and Mike Leander would go on to create Gary Glitter and to produce and be involved in all that.
I think did he not do the strings on She's Leaving Home?
Very good, he did. Yeah. He did. We should do this more often, mate. Anyway, the one hit that he managed to get in Australia that was never heard of anywhere else in the world was a gorgeous thing called Sons and Lovers.
Your dough, then away she'll go, bow, bow.
that is Gene Pitney.
The Rockville Rocket.
Thank you very much.
He had a great voice.
Firstly, he had Paul Jones doing Sons and Lovers. That's Gene Pitney doing...
Doing Who Needs It, which was the flip side of a single called The Girl Belongs to Yesterday, written by Jagger and Richard, which became a hit in England. We didn't like it for some reason, so we flipped it over. Who Needs It was on the other side, and that became the massive hit in Australia,
so
not
big.
That Girl Belongs to Yesterday.
I think it's so big a hit, that is an ad. Someone turned that into an ad.
You can see it, actually. Yeah. But he also had a number one that was an Australian-only hit a little bit later in his career called Blue Angel.
Yeah.
Blue Angel.
Practically the last hit that he had, that Trans-Canada Highway.
But the good thing, with him, with people like him... Orbison and Cliff Richard, there's so much product.
Exactly.
I was thinking about an Elvis one. I didn't bring an Elvis, but there is one interesting Elvis one.
Yes.
But it's ruined, given my tight sort of criteria here, by the fact that it was a number one in Britain. But RCA in America wouldn't put out his version of Wooden Heart from the film G.I. Blues. They thought it was too novelty, too silly. They were trying to get him up the charts with all those operatic songs, and Surrender and, whatever. And so they allowed UK to put it out, and it went to number one in the UK, and a guy called Joe Dow covered it in America, and that became the hit in America. But again, so much product you can actually put like that.
Okay, now I will say this is ABC local radio it's Nightlife, and Glenn A. Baker is with us. The criteria this evening is the hit must be a top three hit virtually in Australia. Nowhere else in the world did it bother the scorers. Now... And as you can hear, we're playing... These are not obscure artists.
No, and we all know these.
And we all know the songs.
Hold on close to our heart. Now, this has got a great story. This is the end of the 60s. Jose Feliciano has had Light My Fire. He's done these interesting versions of other people's songs, but in the sort of Latino age, like, Hitchcock Railway. He's done a bunch of Barry Gibb songs. Okay. He's done really well. He's in England. And Tom Springfield, brother of Dusty and writer-producer for The Seekers, has a song that he's trying to get The Seekers to do. And I think he's even recorded a backing track at Abbey Road Studios. The backing track's there. The Seekers are not going to do it. Jose Feliciano comes to town. The song has already got a little bit of a Latin tinge in its subject. He apparently rings Jose at his hotel and says, "Pop over to St. John's Wood, will you?" He pops over to St. John's Wood, lays down the vocal for this. Now, this is where it gets even more curious. It doesn't get... I'm not even sure it was even released in England. And no master tape appears to exist. It appears they cut an acetate, and it's from that acetate that every release in Australia, it sounds worse every time you hear it, because there is no master tape. Right. So that day, he goes in, so it arrives in Australia, probably with a note to somebody in the A&R department saying, what can you do with this? What they could do with it, Rod, was send it to number one.
Unbelievable.
It was an Australian number one, and nowhere, again, when Jose comes to Australia, he has to play this, but nowhere else in the world does he play it, or is he required to play it?
Sing no sad songs for me. Adios, amor. Of joys that you adios, amor, for love's a game and someone has to lose, my friend. I should have known my dream would end. Adios, amor, while my heart aches for you.
So, adios amor. I don't think it doesn't sound like
Doesn't sound like a Tom Springfield song,
well,
does it?
Doesn't sound like Seekers. Doesn't sound like the bloke that wrote it. Yeah. Who they wrote it for, or the bloke that had
it. Well, it was written by Tom Springfield with Ron Newell, who worked on a bunch of Hollies records, and was the Hollies.
Okay.
So this is, it's a weird one, but talking about the Hollies, of course, we were loyal. We gave them hit after hit after hit. We slavishly followed what was happening in Britain. They were having a few hits in America. But then at the end of the 60s, going into the 70s, we found a song written by Tony Hicks that we loved so much. I don't know what DJ was responsible, that we whipped it out here. It was on the charts for about 6 months. It got to number two in Sydney, possibly got to number one elsewhere in Australia. Was probably the biggest and most consistent, in terms of duration, hit they ever had in Australia, and no one else in the world knows a damn thing about it, and it's called Too Young to Be Married.
Love this song.
Hey, you got your way.
We're
going to
play the whole thing.
Early every morning, she gets up long before the sunshine, greets the milkman who's still yawning, and reads the paper for a short time. Cause the kids get out of bed, they never hear a word she says. Husband stands to leave the table. She says, I hope you have a good day. He thinks one day soon as I'm able, I'll get a job where I get good pay. They find it hard to make ends meet, but they don't mention it, because they have each other, and love is free, while they're supposed to be. Too young to be married, too young to be free, too young to be married, but what can they do? They were gonna have a baby.
Particularly good song, isn't it?
Folks, you should have seen him. He was away. Rodney was away. He was really enjoying every ounce of that. And it's beautiful. It was beautifully produced. And the Hollies were always far greater than they were ever given credit for.
But what could they do? They were going to have a baby. Like, that's the thing. It was like, well, there's no...
It's a morality play of its time.
Exactly right.
Yeah,
and
very much.
The misery of her suburban life. It's a bit sad. Keith in Port Hedland says, loving this, but just wondering where New Zealand fits into Australian hits.
Can I just say, and I should have said this earlier, that a lot of these were hits Australasian. Oh. I would say that not only were they hits here, but they were also hits in New Zealand. And I suspect if we were in New Zealand, we'd find another whole brace of them that were only hits in New Zealand. Because the Kiwis always had great taste. Always had great taste.
Also, Surfer Kid from the 70s suggests Surfing USA, Leif Garrett.
I'm not inclined to play it, but yes, quite possible.
It was a huge hit out of Countdown.
Well, there was at that time, Warners was breaking a lot of things like, you know, Roger Vidouris, Get Used to It.
Great song.
Waku. No, wasn't Warners, but it was the same kind, you know, were having a big hit. And there was also, and I would have played this except it got to number three or something in Britain, and that's Carol Bayer Sager, You're Moving Out Today. All of which the American charts missed. Now, talking about, this is one the American charts missed. The Jackson 5 were recovering after having been the Jackson 5 and relaunching themselves as the Jacksons. Michael was, of course, a major presence, but they weren't doing as well in America as they were doing in other parts of the world at that time. We loved them down here. The Brits loved them too. And they put out a track that got to number 54 in America.
Right.
Got to number 54 in America. Let me tell you, it did a damn sight better here. I think you'll know exactly what I mean when you hear it.
They're about to tour Australia again, and no doubt we'll be including.
Oh yeah, wouldn't
song.
You?
But wouldn't they do that in America?
I tried to find it on a number of American anthologies, and it was not. Many of these tracks you cannot find on American anthologies because if it wasn't hit in America, they don't want to know. Look, I suspect that they've worked it up in their repertoire to the point where Americans think that it was in fact a big hit. They don't realise
that
now. A man called Jonah Louie,
yes.
Real name John Lewis. I know, why not?
He changed his name to something far more difficult to
remember.
He
was from Brett Marvin and the Thunderbolts, and he was from Terry Dactyl and the Dinosaurs. And,
oh, really?
Yeah, and he'd been in a number of groups. Anyway, he did okay. He was on the Stiff label in England, great indie label, and he had a big hit with Always Find Me in the Kitchen at Parties, and he had a big hit with the Christmas song Stop the Cavalry, but then his English career stopped dead. We beg to differ, because we pick one of his songs, and where did we send it?
Straight to
number one. The English had no idea what was happening. We have Jonah Louie at number one in Australia in that sort of new wave post-punk era with a little thing called Louise, We Get It Right.
Never need.
Louise, we get it right, and indeed we did get it right. We're
number one, and while we're on the subject of number ones, it does seem to be a little bit of a groove we've got ourselves into. Yeah. Let's go into the 90s, and remember, we started with Crash Craddock in the 50s, so this syndrome, this phenomenon was still going on. There's a band from Chicago calling themselves Sonia Dada.
Now, I remember them because there was a picture of a child riding an alligator or a crocodile on the cover of the album.
There it is. I'm holding it up.
Very strange.
The boy riding, the Sonia Dada album. And they were a smash in Australia. We didn't know, again, it almost, mate, takes us back to Crash Craddock. This was still probably in the days before Google and the internet. We thought that Sonia Dada must have been a big international sensation. Sonia Dada couldn't crack it for a hit probably outside of Chicago. They did not make the American charts. They did not make, unless somebody can tell me that they were number one on the Slovenian charts or something, which I'm quite prepared to believe. They were an Australian only. They came out here, they toured, they were fantastic, they were a bluesy, gutsy, roaring band, and we just loved them. And it was a thing called You Don't Treat Me No Good, number one. More.
I'm gonna pack up my bag and I'm gonna go away. I'm gonna split, I can't stand it. I'm gonna give it up and quit and ain't never coming back. But before I get it going, I got to say, I know you used to love me, but that was yesterday. And the truth, I won't fight it. When the love starts burning, you got to do what's right.
I'm going to be honest with you, I really don't like that song.
Well, here comes a song that I really don't like, but however, I appear to be overruled by the entire Australian nation. We're talking here about the Big O. The Big O's career was very bizarre. He was so big that he toured top billed with the Beatles and the Rolling Stones. That's how big Orbison was. And it lasted until 1964, when he had the biggest hit of his career with Oh Pretty Woman. Hmm. Now, you would have thought that once you got number one all over the world, it was you were going to soar forever. After that, it just, the ground fell away from under him. And the only thing that kept Roy's career happening was countries like Argentina, Spain, Australia, the Netherlands, you know, things like that. The rest of the world gave him hits. But the Americans, after Oh Pretty Woman, did not want to know. Now, Australia, at the end of the 60s, we took our love for Roy a bit seriously. We took a record, again, it was like it was on the charts, like the Hollies one, for about 6 months. It was number one for more weeks than you can count. It had what I think a Dipsy and Dopey Fairground Calliope. I know, you're looking daggers at me at this time.
I love this song.
I found this a really irritating song, and I'm prepared to have armed guards to leave the building tonight because others will not agree with me. However, Australians, when Roy came here, Roy always had to do this song, even if he, again, never played it anywhere in the world. It was his uber Australian number one.
And it was probably his last number one until perhaps the late 80s. It's Penny
when he came back, and of course, with you two working. This is Penny Arcade. Okay, I'll put my fingers in my ears and you play it.
A light shone in the night some way ahead. Blue turned into green, then it was red. Answering the night, love music played. The light I saw in the night was a penny arcade. Any arcade.
Not the only major American star only to have a hit in Australia and a hit here and nowhere else. This was, I think, a song recorded in Australia, was it?
No, he was. We're talking about Neil Sedaka.
Yep.
He actually concentrated on Australia for a couple of years, had two Australia-only hits with Star-Crossed Lovers, a number one, and Wheeling, West Virginia, a top ten, which came out of a batch of songs he wrote that he tried to get the Monkees to record. And then he went, after he left Australia, he went to England, hooked up with the guys who would become 10cc, and had hits like Solitaire. He just knew where to sort of focus himself. But during that Australian period, I gave you the choice. Do we play Star-Crossed Lovers or Wheeling, West Virginia? Both of them were Australian-only hits, and you picked Wheeling, West Virginia.
Do you know who you are? Where is the guy from Wheeling, West Virginia?
Yeah, fascinating story about Hollywood.
It's a lovely piece of writing, song. That, actually. Oh, you know, music. Zooming his sports car in the gate. It was at MGM. Was it?
Yeah, exactly. All right, not a lot of time left.
Not a lot of time. One man I loved and adored. We knew him mostly as the vocal partner, producer and songwriter to Nancy Sinatra.
Oh,
but
yeah.
In Australia, and only in Australia, he had his own big hit. We lost him fairly recently. I believe we lost him. I'd hate to be writing him off early.
Gone.
Yeah. His name is Lee Hazelwood, a gorgeous voice, and this was an Australian-only hit he had called The Girls in Paris, and I love this.
My poor heart never can forget. This night I wish that I were still in Paris, yet hear them singing.
La 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 la.
The girls in Paris wear sunshine on their face. They smile a Paris.
You know, some of these songs I hear and I cannot believe they're only hit in Australia because they're played so often on Australian radio. We've got time for one more.
Does that
Glenn?
Say we had great taste? Here's a song that didn't even make the American top 50. It got to number 51. It was in the surf era at the time when the Beach Boys and Jan and Dean and everyone were having hits. And we just presumed it must have been a global hit. It wasn't. It was I Live for the Sun by the Sunrays. A smash in Australia, and only in Australia, because we had Southern Californian weather anyway.
What's going on?
Nothing has gone wrong all night, and suddenly on our last track.
Here we go. There we go. Oh, no, that is Refusing to Play.
If that one is Refusing to Play,
so,
I can give you this. And it's track 13 on this disc,
oh,
Rodney.
No.
Look, I'll just sit here and talk to you. For, you know, I was born at a very early age.
Thank you very much. Your mother was there at the time.
Yeah, that's my mother was there.
All right. So is this the Sunrise?
13. No, this one is 13, if you can get it to 13.
Yeah,
and
we
it's,
will.
And we will hear. I'd hate to announce it and not give it right.
Well, this is the Sunrise. We live for the sun.
I got cooked.
Hard to believe that's the only place in Australia, place in the world that was a hit. The Sunrays, We Live for the Sun, or I Live for the Sun. Glenn, thank you so very, very much.
We could play Hole in My Heart all the way to China by Cindy Lauper.
It's the song that I love.
Everlasting
Love
by
you
too, and there were things that we just couldn't get to.
We'll do it again, don't worry
about
that.
It was good fun.
Glenn A. Baker, thank you very, very, very much, and have a great new year.
I shall indeed.